I call Senate Resources Committee to order. Today is Monday, March 28th, 2016. We're here in Juneau in the Capitol Building. Let the record reflect that the time is 3:30 p.m. Committee members present today, Vice Chair Senator Costello, Senator Machicki, and Senator Coghill, as well as myself, Senator Giesel. I expect Senator Stoltz will be joining us soon, as well as Senator Stedman. Well, here he is. Welcome, Senator Stedman. And Senator Wilikowski will also be along shortly. Let's see. Recording secretary today is Ann, and we have Cody helping us out on the audio. So thanks very much to both of them. We couldn't meet without their presence, keeping us on track. Today, the committee has two items on the agenda. First, we're going to take up House Bill 137, and then we'll go to an appointment of Luke Hopkins to the board of the Alaska Gasoline Development Corporation. Members probably saw that a previous agenda included House Bill 216, but that was taken off the agenda for today, and Mr. Joey Merrick, also appointed to the AGDC board, is unable to join us today for personal reasons, so we'll interview him at another time. So we'll start out with House Bill 137. The bill was last heard on March 23rd. This is the fourth hearing in Senate Resources, and there is a new CS. Senator Costello, a motion?
Madam Chair, I move work order number 29-LS0625/Uniform before the committee as a working document. It's the committee substitute for House Bill 138.
Thank you very much. I'll object for purposes of discussion, and I'll have the committee staff, Ike Gelopsis, come to the table and talk us through the committee substitute changes. Oh, welcome, Senator Wilikowski. We're just starting House Bill 137.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the Senate Resources Committee. I'm Ike Gelopso, staff to Senator Giesel and to the Senate Resources Committee. With your indulgence, Madam Chair, I'll briefly go over the explanation of changes contained in work order uniform, and that can be read through the attached sheet entitled Explanation of Changes for House Bill 137 from Version V to Version Uniform. The first change, Madam Chair, occurs on page 1, lines 1, 3, and 12. That modifies the title of the bill, and it removes language related to the powers and duties of the Commissioner of Fish and Game. That was with respect to the attempt to institute the Chitna dip netter fee. That's changed elsewhere in the bill. The second change replaces the word rivers with watersheds, and it also adds a new semicolon in the title related to the Chitna dip net fishery. Change number 2 on the bill is found on page 2, lines 2 through 7. This creates a new section 1, and that creates what's going to be called the Sustainable Wildlife Account as a separate account under the Fish and Game Fund. And that account would receive monies accruing from the intensive management surcharge that would be imposed by a later section of the bill, that section being section 23. Then, Madam Chair, Version Uniform removes sections 1, 2, 3 of the prior Version V. Those sections, respectively, were firstly the intent language related to the North American Conservation Model, secondly, a paragraph related to the powers and duties of the Commissioner of Fish and Game, and thirdly, a section removing language related to the payment of hatchery bonds that conforms throughout the rest of this version as well. Change number 4 can be found on page 4, line 10, and that lowers the resident hunting license in section 4, which could have been prior version section 7, from $40 to $35. Change number 5 removes section 6, 11, 13, 15, and 17, of the prior version V of the bill. And all of those sections, Madam Chair, related to the discussion at the last committee hearing with Senators Wilikowski, Stedman, and Stoltz about the reimposition of the hatchery surcharge once those bonds had expired. The repeal language for those bonds will remain, but the surcharge finding a way to remain has gone away as a consequence of the removal of those sections. So there should not be a $9 surcharge that will be added from here. That is removed. Change number 6 is found on page 8, line 19, and that amends section 20, which is the former section 27, to reword the age of 16 to 16 years of age. Change number 7 can be found on page 8, lines 25 through 28, and that amends section 21, which is the prior version, section 28. This was the sockeye stamp for the Kenai and Kisiloff watersheds by adding the word watershed after the words Kenai and Kisiloff rivers on lines 25 and 28, respectively. Change number 8 can be found on page 9, lines 21 through 31, and that adds a new section 22. And that repeals the certain hatchery surcharge provisions, and it has an effective date that is further in the bill with other effective dates related to the expiration of that hatchery surcharge. Change 9 is found on page 10, line 13, and that amends section 23, the prior version, section 29, and this increases the intensive management surcharge for non-residents from $20 in the prior version of the bill to $30, while keeping the resident surcharge at $10. Change 10 is found on page 13, lines 9 through 20. This adds a new section 31, amending an existing statute, 1610-570, that it should see Article 11 of Title 16 entitled the Chitna Dipnet Fishery, and this adds duties of maintaining and improving state-owned land used to access the Chitna Dipnet Fishery and maintaining and operating sanitary facilities provided for the use of persons participating in the Chitna Dipnet Fishery to the Department of Fish and Game. It should be noted, Madam Chair, that that existing statutory language also requires the Department of Fish and Game to work in concert with the Departments of Natural Resources as well as Transportation and Public Facilities, respectively. Change 11 can be found on page 13, line 21, and that amends section 32, which was the prior section 37, and adds a repeal provision for the sustainable wildlife account. That's the new section 1 of this bill. Change 12 is found on page 13, line 22, and this amends section 33, the prior version, section 38, and that adds a repeal provision to the Fish and Game Fund statute for payment of revenue bonds related to hatchery, some additional cleanup once those bonds have been paid and those statutes can fully be repealed. Change 13 is found on page 14, lines 13 through 21, and that amends section 35, which is the prior version, sections 40 and 41, by making the effects of sections 22 and 33 conditional on the Commissioner of Fish and Game notifying the reviser of statutes in writing that the bonds, interest, and any other applicable obligations have been met and fully discharged. And finally, change 14 is amending section 37, the prior version, section 43, by extending the sunset date of the intensive management surcharge from December the 31st of 2020 to December the 31st of 2022. And my apologies, Madam Chair, that is found on page 14, line 24. That is the summation of the changes in this version, ma'am.
Thank you. Any questions on the CS? Senator Wilkowski.
Section 31, page 13. I just want to get some intent language on the record so that we understand what we're talking about here, particularly with item 1 where it says maintain and improve state-owned land used to access the Chitna Dipnet fishery. Are we requiring the Department of Transportation to clear the road past O'Brien Creek so people have access into the canyon there?
Madam Chair, Senator Wilkowski, that is the intent, but the only obligatory language as I read the statute is for the Department of Fish and Game to work in conjunction with those agencies.
Follow-up?
Okay. Well, I'll just put on the record as I read this, the Department, with the cooperation of DOT and Public Facilities and DNR, shall maintain and improve state-owned land used to access the Chitna Dipnet fishery. So what the way I read that is we are requiring by law all those three organizations to work together to make sure that the dipneters have access past O'Brien Creek, drivable access in a car, not an ATV. Is that your understanding? Just so we're clear.
Madam Chair, Senator Wilkowski, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Further questions? All right, seeing none, I'll remove my objection. Is there further objection to adopting the CS? Seeing none, the CS stands before us then as adopted. Public testimony was closed on March 23rd, so I bring the bill now back to the committee for questions and discussion. Department of Fish and Game is present here in the room, as well as the bill's sponsor, Representative Tallarico. Representative Tallarico, just to get you on the record, would you join us and give us your thoughts on the bill and the new committee substitute? And by the way, welcome. Thanks for joining us today.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate it. And committee members, I appreciate your time that you've put into this legislation. And I've certainly looked over the new CS, and I'm pretty happy with everything that I see. I appreciate all of the input and the effort that you've put forward into that. I probably mentioned this before. I would be a little more fond of a $5 fee for residents with the intense management, that particular surcharge. Other than that, I actually like what I see, and I appreciate all the work that you've done. So I really don't have any further comments, Madam Chair.
Great. Well, thank you very much for those comments.
Thank you.
All right. Could I invite Deputy Commissioner Brooks up? Could we talk briefly about, you gave us some documents. Committee members should have questions from committee or Senate Resources Committee on HB 137 dated March 28, 2016. It's kind of a Q&A. And there's also a page with some numbers on it. So, Deputy Commissioner, if you could kind of walk us through this document.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd be happy to do that. For the record, Kevin Brooks, Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Fish and Game. We provided some information after the last hearing. There were some questions that came up. We did our best to answer those in a short period of time. We still have a few more things to get back to the committee. And those are listed in a document with several pages. The things that we covered there was you had asked how would the department plan to use some or all of these increased revenues from the bill. We've given you about a three-page white paper on that, listing out some of the things. You asked about, one of the committee members asked about the impact of the changes in the age requirements, and so we've provided information to you, an estimate of the number of youth who are no longer by license between 16 and 18, as well as the impact on permanent ID cards by raising that age from 62 to 65. So you have that in the packet. Several questions came up related to a sockeye stamp, and I think since then we have all clarified that that deals with sport fishing only. It does not affect personal use fishing. There was a question on the status of the hatchery bonds. We checked with the debt manager, Devin Mitchell, and the Department of Revenue. He said he expected by 2021 or early 22 those bonds would be paid off. Currently, that surcharge generates about $6.3 million a year. $1.4 million of that is generated from sales on licenses to residents. The majority, $4.9 million, is generated from sales on licenses to non-residents. So we've given you that information. And then we gave you some information on, I think Senator Costello had asked about comparison to other states, and we have some information related to that. As I talked with your staff, Madam Chair, we wanted to give you some idea of the change that you can expect to see on a fiscal note. We'll have that to you. We have folks working on that now, but wanted to give you some of the high points of the changes. That's the one pager that was handed out to you. I'll walk through that very quickly for you. On the hunting side, there's a $5 increase to hunting licenses, and that would generate, based on a five-year average of 103,400 resident licenses, $517,000 of additional revenue as a result of changes made in the bill. The intensive management surcharge, again, on residents, that's $10, would generate just over $1 million. On non-residents, it's $30, would generate about $500,000 for a total of $1,535,000. Non-resident black bear had a $150 reduction in the tag, resulting in a $365,000 reduction in revenue. Non-resident brown grizzly, $200 reduction in the tag, resulting in a $369,400 reduction in revenue. Non-resident deer went up $25 for $37,800 increase. Non-resident elk, don't sell too many of those, but it's $150 for six of them. Non-resident goat is just under $5,000 of revenue increase from that change. So the hunting total, it's $1,359,000, just under $1,360,000 from changes from this committee. On the fishing side, the Chitna Dipnet personal use fishery, we've based on about 12,000 of those permits that we issue at $15, that'd be $180,000. And to the point raised earlier, I have reached out to DNR and DOT, let them know this was in there. what the expectations are as far as providing these services now that there's an ability to pay for them. So we're working, continue to work with those two departments. The sockeye stamp, Madam Chair, was a little bit more difficult. We had to make some assumptions on this. From our from our data from the statewide harvest, we're able to determine we have about 140,000 anglers on the Kenai and the Kosilov. And it's about 125,000 on the Kenai and about 15,000 on the Kosilov. And we don't have a way of determining what they target. There's multiple species that they could, so we made an assumption that half of those folks would buy a sockeye stamp. It's really not based on anything. We could do various assumptions, but we assumed 50% would buy a sockeye stamp. And then we do have a breakout between residents and non-residents, and so a total of 71,500 non-residents. Half of that would be about 35,000 times $15, and likewise with the non-residents, about 68,500, half of which would be 34,000. We used a 7-day $45 fee, and you can see there's multiple. There's 1, 3, 7, 14, and an annual. And we don't know what folks will buy, so we just took one in the middle. And again, it's an assumption we made to get to this number to give you some idea. So adding those two things together is about a $2.1 million figure on that sockeye stamp. And I think our actual experience is going to have to dictate what that is. I just wanted to put it in a context and a ballpark for you.
Okay. Question, Senator Michiki.
So that's watershed related, so that includes Russian and...
Through the chair, that's correct, Senator Michiki.
You have enough of a Creole census that was the way you created your assumption.
And through the chair, Senator Michiki, I'm told, I think we have Tom Brookover, our director of sportfish, on the line, and he told me they had really good numbers on the Russian as far as number of anglers. It's a little tougher to get at on some of the other, but the numbers overall, 125 and 15,000 respectively, were solid numbers. So the total for fishing, $2,257,500. And again, we expect a lot of that to go to things that we're not currently paying for, like the maintenance, the things that have been discussed during the committee meetings. The hatchery surcharge we've talked a little bit about. You haven't seen this on a fiscal note because the impact of it occurs too far in the distance in 2022. But as I mentioned earlier, we generate currently about $6.3 million. The fiscal note would be 3.8 because it takes a variety of surcharges and turns them into a $9. So similar to what we just talked about for sockeye, we have 1, 3, 7, 14, and annual licenses there that have different costs. It turns all of those into a $9. So even under the bill changing it to a $9, the $6.3 million in revenue was going to be reduced to $3.8 million in revenue. And so that's the number that would be reduced as a result of changes by the committee. The permanent ID cards we talked about, 158.7 is what we estimate there in additional revenue for a grand total in the first full year of $3.6 million on top of the $8.6 million that was already in the bill for about $12.2 million. So we'll fine-tune those numbers. We have people working on it. We'll get you that fiscal note, but I wanted to give you some idea of the impact on what the committee has been deliberating on.
Very good. Thank you. I liked looking at this chart you created. This was as a result of Senator Costello's question about the fees in different states. That was very informative. We have quite a few zeros, and quite a few $5 where others have hundreds of dollars for different fee, different licenses. So that was very helpful. Thank you. I did have a question on your, I think you referred to it as a white paper. It's the questions that you answered for us. So let's see if I can help identify what page I'm looking at. I guess it's page one. It says ADF&G at the top, increased revenue from HB 137, version U. So at the very bottom of that page one, it says erosion of states' rights to manage. That's the topic heading. And it talks about the relentless erosion of Alaska's rights, increased ADF&G revenue will provide support for Department of Law, ANILCA, and Access Defense Programs. So my question is this. On February 18th, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service had a hearing talking about new rules for refuges. And ADF&G, this was in Anchorage, ADF&G was in the room and were called upon, but the state of Alaska had no response for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. So that was pretty concerning and is and actually opposite of what you're saying here. Was it because you didn't have enough money to walk up to the table and speak?
Madam Chair, no, not at all. And actually, I think if we have Bruce Dale on the line, I may ask him to chime in. I asked the same question when I heard about that, and I understood we had our lead for the program and the room, and it was an honest mistake. He hadn't been given clearance to speak, and he didn't on his own initiative, and that was our mistake. It was a breakdown in our management, and apologize for that, Madam Chair.
Thank you. I will ask Mr. Dale. If you're on the line, Director Dale?
Bruce Dale, Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Welcome. Your comments on the incident on February 18th when ADF&G had no response for U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service?
Yes, Madam Chair. That failure to respond was on me. The representative that we had there, I was out of town, but the representative we had there of staff had talking points. We'd gone over them. They'd been reviewed. We were prepared to deliver those in any of the meetings. And as Deputy Commissioner Brooks stated, the staff member was waiting for approval, and I didn't realize that they were waiting. So we did not make that public comment.
Thank you, Director Dale. Is there opportunity for the department to submit written comment? Or has that passed, that opportunity passed?
No, Madam Chair. The due date for the written comments are April 7th, and we have produced, we are in the process of finalizing our written comments. The state of Alaska will present those. In addition, we worked last week. I was in Pittsburgh at the North American meeting, and the Association of Fish and Wildlife Agencies representing all 50 states plus Canadian provinces will be writing a letter in objection to the Fish and Wildlife Service's proposed rule, as will the Western Association of Fish and Wildlife Agencies. They'll be writing a letter as well, and then we've been working with numerous NGOs that will also be providing similar input. The Board of Game as well, we helped them develop their comments, and they'll be submitting comments by the April 7th deadline.
That's good news, Director Dale. Would you be able to copy me on those letters, and I could pass them out to my committee? We have significant interest in the defense of Alaska's right to manage our lands.
Yes, Madam Chair, we'd be glad to do that. Some won't be finalized until the last minute, the 7th, but if any are finalized and sent them ahead of time, we'll get them to you as soon as they are available.
Thank you very much. I'd appreciate that. Further questions for the department related to HB 137. Yes, Senator Costello.
Thank you. You know, recently the governor has written a letter imploring the legislature to pass revenue-generating bills in addition to others, and I was just curious if the administration considers this a revenue-generating bill.
Through the chair, Senator Costello, absolutely, yes.
Thank you.
I appreciate that question, Senator Costello. I was actually looking at another bill that we heard in this committee related to mining, increasing the mining license tax, and this bill will generate $2 million more annually than the mining tax license bill. So thanks for that question. Senator Machicki.
Deputy Commissioner, just wondering if you applied a test on the $15 sockeye stamp. Do you think your experience with, I mean, all we have is a king stamp, right, to compare it to, but do you think that would discourage folks that are in for a day or so that might be non-residents or even folks that drive down for a day from fishing for sockeye on the Kasiloff or Kenai watersheds? Did you have a way of applying some kind of a formula to your assumption of what it might raise?
Through the chair, and Senator Maticki, when we do our analysis, we do factor in an amount for a negative reaction to a price increase. So we might figure a 5 to 10% drop in sales that might build up back over the subsequent 5 years or so. I might ask, though, Director Brookover if he has any thoughts specifically about effort there. I'd be speculating if I did it.
Director Brookover, can you hear us, and can you respond to Senator Maticki's question?
Yes, Madam Chair. Tom Brookover, Division Director for Sportfish Division. Through the Chair, Senator Maticki, you know, whenever it's very common whenever a license fee like this is either increased or a new stamp or fee is implemented, there is a drop in sales. That's very predictable. It's very common. But beyond that, typically after the first year or two, sales begin to rebound. And we don't have a lot of information specific to any, you know, case like this on the Kenai or Kisilov where we can actually predict how much that will drop or how much that will increase after the first year or two. I think we can expect that kind of a trend, but it's beyond our means to predict how the implementation of a sockeye stamp will implement fishing behavior other than that.
Madam Chair.
Follow-up, Senator Maticki.
I I've been thinking about this. I mean, I'm from a district that is heavily dependent on sport fishing, a lot of lodges and guides and that sort of thing, and I don't believe it'll have much of an impact on them. I kind of worry about the self-service folks and maybe some of the people driving down from Anchorage, but we'll just have to see what that looks like. How would you analyze this after the first year to determine if we've got the right price point on a stamp?
Through the chair, Senator Maticki, we'll absolutely be keeping track, as we do with the king salmon stamps, on the sales between residents and non-residents. And I think with the division's other efforts down there on surveying angler participation, we would try and see if we have, you know, fewer anglers, fewer angler days occurring, and trying to match that up with the sale of the stamps and be able to report back on that. 1 year would probably not give us a data, you know, you need a few more data points in that set to make some meaningful comparisons, I think.
Okay, Madam Chair, if I may.
Yes, Senator Maticki.
I don't think there's an impact on the folks and their dream trip to Alaska. I think we're the potential impacts on the shorter term visitor more likely, but that's it. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Good. Thanks. Further questions, Senator Stoltz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And those of us from other parts of us that come down, we're not just an infestation. We spend a lot of money, too, and drop a lot of money. Probably it would be cheaper to buy fish at times. But I have a question for Mr. Brooks. Of these funds, and I may have missed it when you're talking, are these all unrestricted general fund revenues, and which portion of them are tied to a measure? I wasn't able to follow that through the process.
Through the chair, Senator Stoltz, all of these funds would be deposited in the Fish and Game Fund.
So, Madam Chair, they...
With the exception of the intensive management surcharge.
Actually, Madam Chair, that would too. It would be a sub-account within the fund, so we could track it separately, like we do the King Salmon stamp and like we would do with the sockeye stamp. We would have separate accounting in a sub-account within the fund.
Very good. Follow-up, Senator Stoltz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. After we finish this assessment of how much, can you, I don't need it right today, but give us the collection of taxes by the sport fishing industry. I can see what it is for unrestricted general fund revenues for commercial fishing. It's this fiscal year, it's, I think it was $19 million, and next year projected to be $21.9 million. So we can just compare. I know in other places in this building, there's a hold on all taxes on commercial fishing, and you know, so it's so I make decisions how to vote, see what kind of parity there is in this whole process.
Madam Chair, and through Chair Senator Stoltz, I can tell you that currently, Fish and Game Fund revenue it's a fee for a license, not a true tax. It's a fee for a privilege to fish. We generate about $25 million a year in total, and we just commented that if this bill were to pass and it was fully implemented, it could generate another $12 million on top of that.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mm-hmm.
one more question.
Yes, Senator Michicki.
So the only thing that sort of alludes to dedicated funds is the Chitna Dibnet fishery that has a couple of suggestions, really three. We added two, but that still doesn't dedicate funds. And they all they do say shall, as Senator Wilikowski pointed out, but I do like when people do pay for a tag where they see the direct benefit to it. Do you plan to account for what's spent in the Chitna fishery so that folks paying that $15 can kind of understand that they're getting direct value?
Through the chair and Senator Michicki, just to be clear, all the license revenue is dedicated. The Fish and Game Fund is one of the few dedicated funds, so it's all dedicated for fish and wildlife purposes. We absolutely will use the Chitna Dipnet revenue, that $150,000 to $180,000, depending on how many are issued, for the purposes stated, and that would be, you know, the vaulted latrines, the trash, the road maintenance, those kinds of things. And so it'll be very much separately accounted for and used for that purpose.
Further questions? Senator Stoltz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A follow-up on the Chitna fishery. As we're sitting there with all the draws on that for the public safety and sanitation items, and I don't know how much of a drivable road you can accomplish for $100,000 or so after you pay all the other costs. Can you give us your expectations? I think most people I talk to expect something they could drive their off-road vehicle, their four-wheel ATV on, and not have a bank collapsing on them. I think it might be a little mistake to have on the record that we're expecting a drivable vehicle road, which there wasn't any protestation when that was offered, whether it was from the... I don't want expectations that there's going to be a road you can bring. I've seen people trying to, in past years, decades past, trying to take RVs and things back. Let's not raise expectations of what you can do with $100,000 unless there's some magic beans in DOT that I don't know about.
Through the chair, Senator Stoltz, first I'll qualify my statement saying I've not been to Chitna myself, and so I'm not personally familiar with the road there. In my conversations with Mr. Derrick from the Chitna Dipnet Association, he talked to me about passage on four-wheelers and that they were having trouble. They'd lost some four-wheelers over the side, and so that was my general understanding of it. I would stand corrected if someone else has information on that. Maybe Mr. Brookover does, but $180,000 has to go for a number of purposes, and so I guess I'd conclude my comment there.
Well, I appreciate your clarification, Deputy Director Brooks. Having spoken with DOT myself, it is not an expectation that you would be able to drive vehicles back. That bank sloughs significantly every winter, and so every spring they can certainly clear it to some degree, but it's not going to be a paved road or even a nice gravel road, frankly. But I think the folks that do Dipnet out there understand the conditions, and they'd be happy not to fall over the edge, period. So, but we can certainly follow up with you next year and see how the road has been maintained. Further follow-up, Senator Stoltz?
I think we just adequately lowered expectations. It was previously on the record we were going to build a drivable road, and now that's been dampened. I threw the wet blanket on it. Mission accomplished.
Okay. Further questions for the Deputy Director? Senator Wilikowski.
Yeah, well, just more of a comment on the impacts to South Central residents. The sport fishing fees going up from 15 to 20, that's a 33% increase. But then you've got the king fee going up $5, another 33% increase. But then you're adding in the Kenai fees, which is $15. You're adding in the Chitna dipnetting fees, which a lot of my constituents, a lot of South Central residents go and dipnet in Chitna. By the time you add all that up, and that's not even including the hunting, trapping fees, for an average sport fisherman who goes and dipnets, you're looking at a couple 100% increase in their fees. So I just worry about the impacts to South Central residents, my constituents in particular, from this. I think we might be going a little bit overboard on the numbers here.
Further questions, comments? Senator Michicki.
Actually, to clarify, the increase in the stamp is not related to dip netting, if I understand that correctly. Is that right?
Through the chair, Senator Michicki, increase to a king salmon stamp is not. It's just tied to a general increase. The creation of the sockeye stamp is for sport fishing. It's not a personal use. So we have the Chitna dip net permit fee that's new now, and then the other general increases.
Further questions? I do want to clarify, at an earlier hearing, Mr. Ricky Geese spoke to us, and he meant to say that he was speaking on behalf of the Kenai River Special Management Area, not the Kenai River Sport Fishing Association, and so I wanted to make sure that was clear. KRSA, Kenai River Sport Fishing Association, has not yet taken a formal position on the sockeye stamp, so I just wanted to put that on the record for clarity. Yes, Senator Coghill.
So just on the Chitna, I think the association was willing to pay for the fee, but when you bring up personal use over against subsistence, that same area is used to get into the subsistence area too, even though it's just yards away. Has there been discussion on some of the subsistence access provisions under the same conditions we're talking about with the Chitna?
Through the chair and Senator Coghill, I would have to defer on that to Tom Brooker. I know his deputy, Tom Tabby, is our individual that works most closely on this topic, and maybe Tom would have some information to provide on that.
Director Brookover, did you hear the question?
Madam Chair, yes, I did. Senator Coghill, the dip net fee in the statute, as I read it, would apply strictly to the Chitna dip net personal use fishery, which, you know, as you know, takes place primarily from O'Brien Creek down to Haley Creek. The Glen Allen sub-district would largely be unaffected except from folks that might be launching, say, from O'Brien Creek and driving upstream. But the Glen Allen sub-district subsistence fishery takes place primarily upstream of the Chitna-McCarthy Bridge, and that's a ways away. So I don't view that as being you know, predominantly affected by the legislation.
Okay. Just wanted to bring
yes,
it up.
Yes, Senator Coghill?
No, just bringing it up as a point.
Very good. Senator Stoltz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess the sponsor or the department, I guess I'm not clear on the, we created a higher threshold of age to buy the fishing license, but I'm unclear whether that's a requirement. Does a your eight-year-old trying to fish for those reds with his Zebco, does he have to get a stamp first before he or she fishes for a sockeye?
Through the chair, Senator Stoltz, the license requirement or the lack of a license requirement for someone under 18 extends to stamps as well.
Thank you for that clarification. Further follow-up, Senator Stoltz?
Is that a rigid department policy that we can go back on, that how you've enforced it? Or I don't see a differentiation in the statute.
It has been our policy since we've had a King Salmon stamp, certainly, that there are no other stamps associated with a license that a person would have to buy if they didn't otherwise have to buy the license itself.
Thank you. I'm happy to get that on the record, Madam Chair, so we don't get a surprise later. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Machiki.
Well, Madam Chair, and Senator Stoltz, I was curious about that as well. In Section 21, it says, resident in Ajima sockeye stamp tag for the Kenai and Kasilof Rivers, a resident may not engage unless that person, and if you look at B, it says, is under 18 years old.
Page number again, Senator.
I'm sorry, page 8, section, or line 24 through 29, and then page 9, line 1.
Thank you for spotting.
Very good.
That.
Thank you.
Further questions? Thank you. Deputy Director, I assume you'll be putting in an updated fiscal note when the bill moves.
Yes, Madam Chair. We're, you know, waiting for the dust to settle a little on this. We are ready. We have folks updating it now, so we'll have one, you know, hopefully by tomorrow we'd have one updated.
Okay, that's great. We also have a letter of intent that came with the bill from the House. That letter of intent does need some drafting work, and so it's my intention to let the next committee of referral do that correcting of drafting, and that will be, of course, Senate Finance, where Senator Nowicki will be. Is there further discussion? All right, seeing none.
And Madam Chair?
Senator Stoltz.
Just on the record, on the letter of intent of the House approved, I think there's some good intent on here, and just have concerns. There's still a contentious issue on recommendations with sheep, livestock, and that I don't want to send a direction of something that is of concern to the agricultural community before fleshing that out. But I do commend the House member, Representative Culver, that did bring this forward, and it's things have developed since this was passed last year. So it wasn't his intent to. This was probably appropriate last year, but needs another look this year.
Thank you, Senator Stoltz. That's something the Senate Finance Committee will take care of. Seeing no further questions, Senator Costello, a motion.
Madam Chair, I move CS for House Bill Number 137, Work Order 29-LS0625/Uniform from committee with individual recommendations and forthcoming fiscal note.
Is there objection? Seeing none, House Bill 137 will move from committee with individual recommendations and forthcoming fiscal note. We'll take a brief at ease to sign documents. We're back on the record. The second item we're taking up today is the confirmation of Mr. Luke Hopkins to the Alaska Gasoline Development Corporation Board. And so I would invite Mr. Hopkins to please come forward, identify yourself for the record, and tell the committee why you would like to serve on the AGDC board.
Madam Chair and committee members, thank you very much for this opportunity to appear before you in person. My name is Luke Hopkins, and I understand that you have my letter that I submitted to the commission office. I've been in Alaska since 1966. I got here as quick as I could, straight out of high school, to attend the University of Alaska in Fairbanks. And in Fairbanks I stayed all those years. I have been involved with major projects at the University of Alaska for my 35-year career there, and also in public office. I have been involved with voting for either on appointed positions or in local government as an elected official for almost 19 years in our community, making sure that what happens in our neighborhoods is a public action and fully disclosed. Of course, six of those years I have been mayor in the Fairbanks North Star Borough, and that is where most recently major actions on the importance of economic development in our community, therefore our state, has occurred, because I have brought many of those items forward or led a team that has developed those actions in our community, therefore our state, and more of that will be seen in the very near future around Eielson Air Force Base, as Senator Coghill knows. I have been on, of course, involved with natural gas issues probably since 2006, when I was appointed to the Alaska Gas Line Port Authority as a board member. And there we, of course, had actions to bring forward one of the state's multiple chances to develop a gas line. And, of course, I now sit on the Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation Board, where I think it's the best project that we've ever put forward, because the partners and the state and Alaskans are, I would say, pretty darn close to 100% behind it. There are issues with it, of course, but this is a major project that has strength as compared to the other pipeline projects to develop natural gas, to monetize natural gas, and to get natural gas to Alaskans. And I think that's the hat that I wear and pull down on my head the strongest, is so that Alaskans can benefit both from natural gas and the revenue stream and possible alternative energy sources from that revenue stream. So that's why I would like to be on this board and remain on this board following the appointment. And that, I guess, is just a brief summary. And if there are any questions, I will, of course, be glad to answer them. I could talk for a long time, mm-hmm. but certainly you probably have questions that you want to ask me.
Thank you.
So with that, thank you very much for the opportunity.
Questions from committee members? Senator Coghill.
I'll start off. First of all, as the mayor and what the work you did with Eielson Air Force Base, you are to be commended. So I'm very grateful for that.
Through the chair, thank you, Senator.
I do struggle with the Port Authority in many, many ways. And some of the criticisms that I've had of it have been the fact that they go into executive session and then you try to find out what the deal has been. And that's going to be one of the criticisms that you're going to face probably with this board. What has been your input on trying to make sure that we get this information more out in the public, and is there ways that you've learned from the Port Authority that we can do that better, or do we end up in a loop that we never can get out of?
Through the chair, Senator Coghill, while I was on the Port Authority board, I stepped off because I wanted to bring some actions forward, but I was mayor and I could not bring those ordinances forward, so I resigned from the Port Authority. And now, being on the Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation Board, I do find that, and again, SB 138 gave special opportunities to the AGDC that are not strictly in the public venue that I was as mayor and a public body called the Assembly, where prior to going into an executive session, and there's a long-standing action of 5 days public notice and, mm-hmm. so that the public has clear understanding of what an executive session is going to have. And I have spoken to this with our board members, and we are taking it under pretty strong consideration on our gas line board about how we produce the agenda, even though we are exempt from many of the actions and have different standards than the public body that I've been involved with 5 years on the Assembly and then another 6 years as mayor bringing things before the Assembly.
Thank you.
Mr. Hopkins, you commented that, in 2006 you were appointed to the Port Authority version, and this pipeline is the best ever. Why would you describe, what would be your description of why the Port Authority and other efforts did not go forward?
Madam Chair, that's a huge question. I guess a lot of it is the market on the projects that have been brought forward. Obviously, the TAPS pipeline, separate from the gas, TAPS pipeline had quite the push behind it. We had one of the briefest construction periods, waiving of many of the permitting requirements. When you look at of the gas line projects, whether you're going into North America, the Chicago market, the Alberta hub, you know, any one of the hubs, the market just didn't develop as opposed to the cost of a huge project. I know that there's questions out there now whether this particular project, the AKLNG line, that I speak to as a huge project for Alaska, but yet probably the best opportunity. This question's about the market right now, but we're not building the pipeline right now. So we're working through, as all of us know, pre-feed to that pre-feed decision, and there's stage gate opportunities for this project to advance. But it, certainly with having the three major producers on the North Slope and the state of Alaska, the legislature, both the administrative side and the legislature, strongly legislature behind it, that's the traction that I see. I hope that answered your question, Madam Chair.
To some degree, I think that Alaskans need to be reminded that 10 years ago, even 5 years ago, that gas was more valuable bringing oil out of the ground. And in fact, the AOGCC, Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, had not even given permission to remove gas. So having pulled gas off the North Slope earlier than now, we would have lost significant value in oil, which is a higher priced commodity. So that's just something that I feel Alaskans need to be continually reminded of. It's not that we've been tardy in developing a gas pipeline. The gas has been more valuable as an extraction commodity. But you also have jurisdiction over the ASAP line on AGDC. It's not just AKLNG. So what is your assessment of the ASAP line, the smaller in-state line?
Madam Chair, if I may go back to your statement that you just made, I failed to make that comment about the AOGC did not allow the gas to be taken off the North Slope because it was reinjected and used there to produce the oil. So thank you for putting that on the record, and sorry that I forgot to say that, because I'm aware of that also. So, Madam Chair, to your question, as I understand it, the board's action, I want to say around mid-2015, maybe in September, I don't know the exact date, but the board put the action to go to non-binding open season on hold. So the whole ASAP project as a full-fledged project to keep moving forward was put on hold because, in huge part, because AKLNG was the project that we are all working towards. Now, I'm sure that this committee and the legislature has heard from the AGDC senior staff that there's certain components of ASAP that we are still working on, and a lot of that is bringing forward the supplemental EIS for certain parts of the ASAP project. And if we hold on that, that's going to cause, it could cause us to go all the way back again for the environmental impact statement, because if you just let those things sit idle, they get stale, and then you have to go back and show that all of the information is still on topic, and that takes a lot of work. So ASAP is a very robust Class 3 estimate. I've had the opportunity to sit and look at that and be briefed by the senior staff that are on the that have information about the ASAP project. It has huge amount of information. It's sitting there right now. But as I said, the major work, the major expenditures that the corporation's making, probably 60 to 40 for the AKLNG project, because that is the one that has the traction.
Thank you. Further questions? Senator Stoltz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Welcome, Mr. Hopkins. I was speaking to Mr. Rigdon Boynton when he was working for somebody, whether the governor or AGDC. I asked him about AGPA and where it was. He goes, it's been dissolved and it doesn't exist. And I asked him, well, has it really been dissolved or has it just been reconstituted in the governor's office? And I got a chuckle out of him. I didn't know how to interpret that, but it was a pretty careful chuckle. How would you describe the dissolution of AGPA into where we are? And we see a lot of the former members of AGPA, including former Senator Halford, who was a fairly well-compensated consultant, lobbyist for AGPA for several years. What is some of the lineage that's crossed over and some of the values and aspirations of that group, of which the three communities, maybe two-point-something communities at a time, how that's evolved, devolved, or whatever, however it's where it is now, and the influence of AGPA on the current board.
Through the chair, Senator Stoltz, if I just may ask a clarifying question on your last words. The Port Authority action through the Port Authority board or the AGDC board?
Madam Chair, Mr. Hopkins, I would say the whatever lineage and values and hopes, aspirations, dreams, pipe or otherwise, how are those now, what are the manifestations of those in the new board, which past participants of the Port Authority are now probably the dominant force of the new board as constituted by the governor?
Through the chair, Senator Stoltz, I am one of those currently from a past AGPA board member and now a member of the board of the Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation. My opinion is that the Port Authority's projects, whatever it might be now, I don't know what their project is other than what I've heard some of their board members say, that there could be a routing to Valdez. That's a very, very, very old project. The FERC permits, all of that stuff is, I would say, iced, because it's, from my understanding, they have to start all over again. It's true that at some point there were different actions going on with the Port Authority with, the All Alaska Gas Line. I was involved with those. But on the AGDC board, from my personal experience on that board, I am not there to, to concern myself, and I've spoken to board members of AGPA that I am operating on the AKLNG line. That is the FERC's submittal. Senator Halford, he's there also on it, as far as I know, when we have board meetings. That's the intent that I know of and that I support. That's the route. That's what's submitted to FERC. That's what's moving forward with the environmental impact statements. When I was mayor, I was involved with one of the reports that on the APP line where Exxon and TransCanada came into my offices when I was mayor and talked about the route that was going down the highway. All those things are back there now. So my current understanding and my current view and my current votes have been for the AKLNG line, and sure we have the issue of where it goes in the Cook Inlet and things, but the route has already been established by easement we have the easements on just about 100%, and it's state land, and that sits there, and that's a very valuable piece. Of course, it's ASAP also, but so Senator, I hope that answered your question.
Follow up, Senator Stoltz.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and then on the After Attorney General Burns was abruptly removed and you replaced him, was it your expectation that you would chair the committee or the corporation?
There was through the chair, Senator Stoltz. There was some discussion that I heard, and I said that would not be the move, and that was the action that the board took. They did not, my name was not submitted, not moved to be chair at all. I'm fine doing what I'm doing on the board right now with the three committees that I sit on and the board action.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate that. Sometimes the paper doesn't get it actually right, and I wanted to give him the benefit of the doubt on that, and I appreciate his clarification.
Thank you, Senator Stoltz. Senator Wilkowski.
Yeah, thank you. thank you for putting your name forward, and just looking at the document you provided us about some of your background, it's very impressive. I don't think anyone can realistically say you're not qualified for this position. You've got 49-year resident of Fairbanks, 6 years as mayor, planning commission at Fairbanks North Star Borough for 7 years, borough assembly, chair, as I read this, presiding officer, president of the Alaska Municipal League Conference of Mayors, Alaska Gasline Port Authority. The question I have for you, though, is on your AGPA experience, and maybe you can talk about lessons learned from that, and also lessons learned as the mayor and as being a community leader for so many years that you think will help you or help the state get a gas line.
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, I guess one of the strongest points that I think the Port Authority had before it became a two-community member, et cetera, was when the Port Authority was trying to purchase Fairbanks Natural Gas, along with Golden Valley's involvement, to build an LNG plant on the North Slope. So there was about three-quarters of a year of the Port Authority board members, along with the other entities that I mentioned, going down outside the state to the financial world, so to speak, and meeting every few weeks with bond market that would sell bonds and developing a member interest purchase agreement that all sides would find acceptable and be able to continue that work that would have bought some gas off of the North Slope. That failed to materialize, and that's probably one of the strongest pieces, other than when Mitsubishi was involved with Port Authority and Semper and all those things in the past times. So to continue on the responding to your question, as mayor, working with a team is the best way to get things accomplished. As Senator Coghill was talking about Eielson, that was this tiger team that we started, and it was a repetitive, continual action, staying on point about what we were trying to get accomplished. And that's the same, and when I talk to the AGDC board members, that's what we're on. I mean, Dave Cruz, Hugh Short, Heidi Dragas, all of the members of the board are strongly committed, and it's a team effort, I think, when we see what we're undertaking in at the committee level now, trying to speed things up. So I think that's probably the process, that when someone brings a good idea forward, you jump on it as a team and keep that going. So if that answered your question, thank you.
Follow-up, Senator Wilkowski.
And I don't think anybody had, at least as we were watching afar from Anchorage, had any thought that you'd be able to stop the base closure. And that was a pretty amazing. I know there was a big team effort up there. But as the mayor of Fairbanks, I don't know a whole lot of the structure. I know in Anchorage we've got a strong mayor. Is it a strong mayor that you have in Fairbanks? And can you talk a bit about budgetary decisions? And this is obviously a huge project. Has your role as mayor prepared you for the big financial decisions and other decisions that have to be made? And also, I understand you've been involved in trying to get natural gas to Fairbanks. If you can talk a little bit about that as well.
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, I guess I would say course, we have a strong mayor form of government in the borough, where I am responsible with CEO of the government, 400 employees, an annual budget of about $155 million. So over the 6 years that I've worked on that, it's, you know, close to $900 million worth of financial activities, and I didn't have to go back for supplemental. I came out with, you know, anywhere from 1 to 3% left over at the end of the year. So I was very, very proud of that. The actions of trying to bring gas into Fairbanks, again, that's a team effort. I thank and have always thanked Senator Parnell and the legislature for bringing forward SB 23, where it allocated authority and grant funds for to be utilized through ADA, through the community's action for developing a bringing larger volumes, much larger volumes of natural gas to the interior when we had incredibly high prices, and that project continues, and I've been involved all the way up until probably November on that directly. The efforts of developing natural gas for those in the state off of the North Slope and out of Cook Inlet to some degree, but have been the aim of how to get natural gas to Fairbanks and then out beyond that, because that's also very possible, as we even speak about it in the AKLNG actions that our corporation is undertaking with board approval. And I think this committee heard some of that about the benefits to Alaskans, and that's a third leg of the AGDC corporate work that we are expanding now. So thank you for that.
Senator Costello.
Oh, thank you. So, Mr. Hopkins, were you in Fairbanks for the flood?
Through the chair, Senator Costello, I was, as the rivers were rising, I was a student that decided to drive this old rickety car back to Maine, so I didn't stand in the water, but as soon as I came back, which was just days after the water went down, then we had the cleanup, and it was incredible. And I was a student at the university at that time, and, you know, of course, the whole thing with sandbagging, the power plant, and all of that, but you can still go into places and see this was 1967 flood mark.
Follow up, Senator Costello.
My question dovetails on questions you've already answered, but there's an appearance that the governor is trying to put the band back together. And in a Journal of Commerce, Alaska Journal of Commerce article late last year, I quote, Walker has loaded the AGDC board and his staff with former associates from the Alaska Gasline Port Authority, which was formed to build or caused to be built an Alaska gas line. Among Walker's staff are former AGPA Executive Director Jim Whitaker, his chief of staff now, his former law partner, who's the current AG, Craig Richards, Rick Halford is a former board member of AGPA, and then two consultants who also worked on that project, Rigdon Boykin and Radislav Shipkov, and we all know Rigdon is no longer working in that capacity, but can you respond to that concern that the governor is putting the AGPA team back together?
Through the chair, Senator Costello, I agree that it looks like that when you have former individuals that have been associated with it. I have not been involved with any of the discussions about this is the AGPA team and we're going to go to work to maybe point to AGPA again or anything like that. I know that when we were about to vote on the board was about to vote on the Trans-Canada buyout, and that was my first board meeting. I remember talking to someone in in this building, and they said, you better not be putting something towards the Port Authority. And I said, the project is AKLNG, and that's the project that is moving forward, and that's where my vote's going to be. So, again, the individuals that you mentioned, the chief of staff, who, of course, was mayor before I was, the governor, my conversations with the governor are that the project is AKLNG, and if that modifies to some extent, the AKL or the AGDC, of course, has ASAP right sitting there. I mean, that's a fact. That's been there because the legislature said in their various pieces of legislation and capital funds, go do that, and then amended that, of course, with SB 138. So all of it points to, I guess I would say, constructively, the effort to monetize Alaska's gas, and some of those people have, as a couple of them have said, nearly shed blood over it to monetize gas, as many of us have, not necessarily, but certainly put an incredible effort towards trying to monetize Alaska's gas, both for Alaskans and globally. So I don't see that. People do have those old hats. I'm not wearing mine. I'm very proud that I did have the experience of being involved with some of those projects, whether it was the AGEA process, the Port Authority trying to purchase and build a LNG plant on the North Slope through Pentex. They were ready to commit to that. But those are past. Now we're here. So I hope that answers your question.
Senator Kristol?
You had mentioned in a response to an earlier question today that your prime interest is to see that a gas line benefits Alaskans. Do you think that an export line would benefit Alaskans?
Through the chair, Senator Costello, yes, because there are the five offtakes. Commercially available gas to Alaskans, all those questions are being evaluated right now through the board's direction. And the board is supposed to have an update on that whole plan for commercially priced gas available to communities that have a system. And then there's, of course, also the Alaska Alternate Energy Fund, I believe it's called, under SB 138, that 20% of the revenue from an export line of the state's gas would go towards that fund. So I think it's going to be available. There are considerations of how do we pay for that as soon as you hit that valve on the side of the AKLNG line. And, that's something that I'm concerned with is the expectations of, Alaskans along the 60-mile-wide route, and how will they get the gas? Where are the funds for that at this point? But we are developing, as Alaska Statute 31.25, I think, that we are to develop what is required for that, but we don't have the funds as part of the project.
Just one final question.
Yes, Senator Costello.
Thank you, Mr. Hopkins. You had also mentioned that your work on the board is as a team, and you've been enjoying working as a team. Do you consider the legislature part of that team?
Through the chair, Senator Costello, yes. Well, the AGDC has to come and fulfill updates per SB 138 reports, updates on the project, and of course funding through the Executive Budget Act. If I'm correct, we have to get our budget approved annually through the legislature, and the legislature has authority for expenditures. Mm-hmm. So it requires all of us working together to get this gas line moved all the way to export, mm-hmm. and that's the goal that I think all of us have. Of course, it's still years away, as I said, and the decisions still have to be made moving along, and there's not a market now, but in after 2020, 2022, they say that there's going to, because everybody's saying no to something else, we have a lot of funds. put towards this project, and that's what I hope the legislature stays as a partner with those funds so we can keep going with this project.
Thank you. That's it.
Mr. Hopkins, some would call me picky, but this is a very important board for the state of Alaska. And it calls out in statute the description of the public members for the board. The consideration of the individual's expertise and experience in natural gas pipeline construction, operation, marketing, finance, large project management, and other expertise and experience that's relevant to the purpose, powers, and duties of the corporation. So you've talked about your political experience, certainly laudable. There were three folks removed 2 years ago, year and a half ago, who had more than 100 years of hands-on technical experience in natural gas pipeline projects, integrated projects, not just a pipe, but actually gas treatment plants, LNG plants. And they were, in fact, just beginning to dig into the technical aspects of the gas treatment plant on the North Slope, since there are two different qualities of gas that would be going into this treatment plant. So my question is, which of the descriptive roles that I just read from statute do you feel that you bring? What expertise in natural gas pipeline construction technical issues do you bring to the corporation board?
Madam Chair, I guess I would start out with the financial aspect of it. I have not built a pipeline. I will say that on the record. But the different financing packages that I have been involved with getting natural gas to a market, whether that's the interior of Alaska, whether it's working with the Anchorage mayor's office, as I did as mayor, on his energy task force and participating in that, and participating in the sense of how could that funding, how could our funding contribute to LNG coming in or getting gas to Fairbanks. The MEPA action that I had with the financial markets when Golden Valley, the Port Authority, and Fairbanks, or Pentex, the owners of Pentex, continually refined how do we build a North Slope project, how do we build an LNG plant on the North Slope through Pentex actions. All of those financial matters, how do you sell the bonds? Are they debt? Are they junk? You know, where are we with that, the continued action? So I would say the financing is the primary aspect of that. The other one is major projects. Now, it's not gas projects per se. It's not building a pipeline. Again, you know, I have not put pipe in the ground. But in the municipal utility that I certainly led a team on to establish pipe in the ground and work with ADA to get that done. Small scale as it was, six-inch pipe in the ground, and when neighbors come in saying that pipe shouldn't have been put where you had it dug, is the borough responsible, et cetera, et cetera. And trying to get that action passed. So that I would consider a major project for Alaskans. So I think that having the ability to work on that scale at the University of Alaska, being able to coordinate to make sure that a major project, again, not a gas pipeline, but you know, project management, those were many of the 35 years at the university, ensuring that the project wasn't held up, ensuring that safety of those around the construction were recognized and understood. There were major projects at the university while I was there in my career. So that's how I would address that.
Thank you. So Senator Coghill called out your work in Fairbanks as mayor, lauded the work that you've done. So now you're on a statewide project. Do you feel that you would be able to be unbiased in decision making if it came down to making some choices that might involve this community of Fairbanks, which, by the way, I was there for the flood as well as the 64 earthquake and before statehood. So that's Senator Coghill and my mantra. But anyway, do you feel that you can act in an unbiased manner on this board?
Madam Chair, the short answer is yes. I have had, you know, Fairbanks is what I called, as mayor, a vibrant community. We have many opinions there, and many people express their opinions to me about, since I have been on this board, which I waited until I was through my mayorship, that say, you're on the wrong project. You should not be doing what you're doing. And I say, absolutely not. And I think that those that are naysayers or seriously questioning that vote should be another way, I don't think they've paid enough attention to the details of this project and what has been going on so far. So I don't feel I'm biased at all. I think that the state of Alaska, therefore Alaskans, will be benefiting from this. And that's what we certainly need right now.
Thank you. Senator Machicki, question?
Sure. Some might say that AgPut took a direction more than once that perhaps demonstrated missing certain segments of applicable experience. And I have a tendency to agree with that. One of them is the sort of the philosophy of a customer-funded project, which is a direction that we're not going under 138. And you brought up that you have some financing and project experience, and what I have to say is I'm a little bit concerned with the AGDC board, the current makeup, because that's essentially what we're hearing from every new board member. I'm just not seeing a diversified skill set that has any background in the kind of project that we're referring to for the Alaska LNG project. And I have nothing personal against you. I thank you for your many years of dedicated public service. I just, to be frank with you, I'm concerned. And why I worry about that is at some point there has to be someone on the board that can call, I'll try to think of a nice way for the word I would use, but I would say that could just call hogwash on something when it comes to operational marketing and direct natural gas and LNG experience. And I worry about that. I didn't worry with the first couple of board members that took that turn, but it looks like we're going that way almost exclusively, and I just want to hear your response to what I think is a very fair, non-political concern.
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, I guess I would say two things to that, respond with two aspects to your points. Management team that is the corporation, those that work in the corporation, a couple of them sit with us as board members, and the depth of experience that they have in working on this project, and they are the ones that loosen their ties and get out their pencils or whatever the right wording is. They have the expertise of 40 years working with LNG, 20 years working on pipelines and building them. And as you know, we're you know, there's a presidential search right now for a person that has the requisite LNG experience and pipeline experience to the greatest extent. The board, it's true, I don't thinking about it right now, I'm not sure anybody on the board has built a pipeline that I'm aware of. But we have the expertise, and that's what we delve into. The same as when I was an elected official, I didn't know everything about those actions that are coming forward, but you have a team that works on it, and I think that's the benefit of it. We evaluate it. Since I've been on the board, we take issues in executive session to delve into it, and we have committee actions where we sit with the senior staff, and they go over it in detail, and we bring that forward to the board. So I think I think the fiduciary responsibility of the board is there. Somebody that's worked on a side boom, or was foreman of a side boom crew, or whatever you want to say as far as building a pipeline, they are in the senior ranks to a great degree. When I listen to them, that's what I find. So
follow up, Senator Machiki.
I hear what you're saying. In my view, a balanced board has some expertise with the ability to push back on some of the technical aspects, and the technical aspects can be diversified as well. You might have someone with some marketing and someone with some operational and someone with some technical, but you become a victim of staff, and I worry about that. And I don't want this to come across as negative, because I don't mean it this way. I respect the Interior Energy Project's early efforts. What I worry about a little bit is that some may want a project so bad that they may have a tendency to put the cart before the horse. For some on this project, they have spent a generation wanting to monetize Alaska's North Slope gas. And we can draw some parallels between that and the Interior Energy Project. The objective was lower cost energy to folks in Fairbanks, and had a different approach been taken that may have been more successful. I want to know that this board is only willing to go forward if this is a great deal for Alaskans, not because of the simple fact that they really want to see a natural gas pipeline. And without some of that expertise, I remain concerned. I almost wish you would have been one of the earlier applicants before it started looking like this was becoming a board of folks with an absence of that important experience. I don't have any other questions, and it's up to you if you choose to respond. I worry. This is such an important project to all Alaskans, and not only, you ultimately, if things are done correctly, you may get a better result for energy for Alaskans within the state. If it's done poorly, we could be a victim of very significant poor decisions for a very, very long time. So I'm listening. I have a very open mind. I'm listening. I'm just concerned.
If I may respond?
Mr. Hopkins.
Through the chair, Senator Machiki. I guess I would certainly want to have a lot more conversation with you to have you feel a little more secure, positive about the board. When I look at the board makeup and the conversations that I've had with them, I find that they have areas of expertise that apply overall project. And I think that the stage gate aspect of it, where we have funding to go to a pre-feed decision sometime around early 2017, maybe the end of 2016, but I think it's in the first quarter of 2017. All of those pieces are evaluated And much of that is the project management team, where Exxon is the lead, and Exxon has the depth in that. Our decisions are taking that information and having the experts in our house that can look at all of that. There's a huge amount of information, but I think that the different board members, whether you're talking about the chair, the vice chair, and other members of the board, I search for a way to help you feel a little more secure with them. It's, you know, again, as I said, you know, moving towards making decisions, major decisions on a project of this size, I don't know whether the Exxon board or the ConocoPhillips board or the other boards have actually been in the dirt, so to speak, building pipelines, but they have the fiduciary responsibilities to make sure that the money that's spent, you know, and that's a legal requirement, and I take it very seriously.
Certainly, Senator Michikee.
I would have been there with you on, and I'm not telling you that I'm not supporting you. I'm asking questions and just trying to be very transparent about my concerns. Mm-hmm. I received a letter from the governor fairly recently that talked about this project possibly going in a different direction. And when I knew that we had that technical partnership with people that have built many similar projects around the world, I felt fairly comfortable. And I maybe, perhaps had a different view of what the AGDC board makeup should look like. With that letter of us possibly moving in a different direction in the future, I become more concerned, and it brings more light on the expertise of the board, and that's, as this project develops, if there are some that try to move it in a different direction other than the structure of 138, that 52 of 60 legislators supported, that experience, if we moved away from the current structure, could become quite rare. So I that's where my concerns lie.
Thank you, Senator Michikee. Senator Wilkowski.
Yeah, thank you. Just, I guess, a comment more than anything else. But looking at the function of the Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation and the Board and Commission fact sheet, it says the board manages the assets and business of the corporation and may adopt, amend, and repeal bylaws and regulations governing the manner in which the business of the corporation is conducted and the manner in which its powers are exercised. This is a board that is a policy-making board. The prior board, of which we heard a little bit about, was stacked with oil company executives, some of whom didn't even live in Alaska. And so we've had this debate now for several years. Do you want a board stacked with oil company executives who are making decisions possibly that are going to favor their old employers, or do you want a board making decisions who are going to favor Alaskans? You're a 49-year resident. You've got a long, long history of fighting for your city, which is one of the largest in the state. You've got a successful track record of fighting for your community and your state. And so I think you've proven where your heart is. I don't have any doubt at all where when you're going to make a decision, it's going to be in the best interest of the state of Alaska. I have no reservations whatsoever. And for people to allude that you may have some ulterior motives when they were perfectly content stacking the board with oil company executives, I find very disturbing. There's a couple oil company lobbyists who are sitting out in the lobby out there listening to this hearing. They're very interested in this. They certainly know where they want the direction of this board to go. But I thank you for standing up for Alaska. Thank you.
Is there a question in there?
Nope.
Senator Wilkowski?
Just a comment.
Thank you. So, Mr. Hopkins, tell me about your experience on the MAGPER board. That's the Municipal Advisors Group that you most recently served on. How will that influence or inform your work here now on AGDC?
Madam Chair, thank you for that question because, you know, of course, I appeared before, I think, this committee when 138 was moving through and a number of other committees with other mayors, I think Mayor Mike Navarre, and we spoke about the ability to be concerned and we wanted to have some involvement. And so inserted into that legislation in, I don't know, Section 75 or something, is the Municipal Advisory Board, which called out positions to be on that board. So, yes, I was on that right from the start. When the governor first called us together, I was there, and he spoke about what he thought this board would be looking at. We heard great detail about the projects, both ASAP and AKLNG. We had Steve Butt up here as, before us, Frank Richards, and I believe it was Miles Baker giving updates to us on ASAP. It came down to payment in lieu of taxes. And my understanding when I was on that board, there may be different opinions now, but when I was on that board the last time, we were accepting that for this project to move forward, we had to have a payment in lieu of taxes. We had to get the tax issue settled. True, the Fairbanks North Star Borough was one of the communities that was in court time and time again. They finally reached a settlement agreement to pause for 5 years on the issue of taxation. But for the producers to continue, for the project to move forward, the AKLNG project to move forward, my understanding was we had to have fiscal certainty. And it's a collective we, and therefore the board's, the last time I was on that board, we looked at what $15.7 billion in payment in lieu of taxes would be over the life of that project and how it would divide up, what it would be payments for the, you know, to the municipalities. And yes, we still had to work out, and the legislature would probably be the ones that said a proposal is okay on how to divide it up because that's the responsibility. The money comes to the state. And therefore, I agree that the project won't be moving forward if there's not the project the way it's composed now, unless there's fiscal certainty. I understand what the producers want. So, and then there's, of course, the other issue with impact aid and how that gets divided up. But that was a great forum. We heard, we discussed, we took it under advisement, and I believe that when we were expecting a special session, I don't think we're going to have a special session on the constitutional amendment right now. I'm not really sure. We're waiting for further details that might come in the month of April on various commercial agreements and what has to be put in place first. But going back to your question, the MAG board was, I thought, a very great forum to grapple with those issues that affect, of course, municipal governments, but therefore Alaskans on both the benefits and some of the costs of what this project will be for us. Hope that answers your question.
Thank you. Further questions? Senator Machicki.
Mayor, I just wanted to clarify something in case you also misunderstood what I said. I'm not the tirade type, so I'll say it very calmly, but I hope you don't think that I have any doubt that what is in your heart is what's best for Alaskans. Your service has proven as such. So I just wanted to clarify that. My concern is in knowing what's best for Alaskans that you have the experience to know the difference. And that's the only reason for my concern. It has nothing to do with your character or your dedication and your service to this state. It's been incredible. So I just wanted to clarify that in case you also misunderstood my concern.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Machicki. I think I share the same concern, obviously. Other questions from Mr. Hopkins? All right, seeing none from the committee, I'll open it to public comment. There is no one signed up online to comment on the appointment of Mr. Luke Hopkins to the AGDC board. Is there anyone in the room that wishes to offer public comment on the appointment? Seeing none, I'll close public comment. Are there any further questions for Mr. Hopkins? All right, seeing none. In that case, we have a document. In accordance with AS 390580, the Resources Committee reviewed the following and recommend the appointment be forwarded to a joint session for consideration. Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation Board of Directors, Luke Hopkins, Fairbanks, appointed 11-20-2015. Term expires 9-13-2018. This does not reflect an intent by any of the members to vote for or against confirmation of the individual during further sessions. So we'll be signing that document before we leave today. That will conclude our hearing for today. As published, these meetings may last until 5:30 for the rest of this week, just to remind committee members. Our next hearing will be Wednesday, March 30th. We're going to take up Senate Bill 205 and the appointment of Mr. Dave Cruz to the Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation. So at this time, the meeting will be adjourned. The record is 5:10 p.m.